We have to see what ends at the end of the year. Story.
And that. Okay. Rome. Oh, we still have another 20 seconds. No, let it roll. It's okay. I want to welcome Yehud the singer. What year were you my Talmud at BMT when we changed your life around, Brother Eugene?
That way I can tell a story about that too. 1971.
I was Masada Kedushin when he got married in Haifa. 1971.
35 years.
Okay. You see, Ephraim, you're not the only one that had an influence on. You owe me through Rabbi Goldschmidt. That's a different story. What's your name? One second. Did I write it down last time? God, you guys from Torah Shraga, every time there's a different face.
Shivim Panim Latov.
No. I want to keep track of who's sitting in on what. I don't have your name. Gabe Pollack. Gabe, where are you from?
I'm from Long Island.
Where?
Australia.
So that's where Otto Spicer is now.
Spicer?
Yeah, with his out there. He rents something. I think his sister lives there. And where'd you go to high school, Gabe?
Hank.
Where?
Hank.
Hank?
Yeah.
And you're in Torah Shraga?
Yep.
Okay. And you know that I was at Rabbi David's Brit. You're aware of that. Avishai David and Ani Rothkoff go back a long way. Okay, let's begin. There's a world to do today. Today is November 21st, 2010. And I want to say hello to the students sitting in front of me and to the many who are listening across the wide expanse of the universe. I just want to begin with a statement reinforcing what I said last week, because on every street corner it has come up. And I want you to understand me, I want to be crystal clear, if I can use an expression that was in the vogue when I was growing up. Rav Avadia Yosef made some statements last night at his weekly Sheyur. They were recorded and played on the Israeli radio. You might think there's no other news in the world. I heard it at 5 o'clock. I heard it at my house at 5. I heard it at 6 o'clock in my car. I heard it at 7 o'clock in Gruss. People tell me it was on at 8 o'clock. So wherever I went, people were hitting their heads against the wall. And I don't want to go into Rav Avadia's Hashkafa. But on all sides, Rav Avadia is being maledicted. It's not just Rav Avadia. I'll give you a different example, which I'll come to in great detail in the Monday class. It's not for now. But all of you know, when I mention Rav Chaim Isaac Grzynski, the Vilna Rav, I mention him with awe. And my Rebbe would mention him with awe. And nevertheless, people said to me, why do you mention Rav Chaim Isaac with such awe? After all, he told anyone who asked him in 1939-40, don't go to Semple Sugihara, don't get a visa, don't endanger yourself, and anyone who listened to Reb Chaim Isaac basically died, and anyone who didn't listen lived. And I'll deal with that in the Monday class, Halacha L'Maaseh. So I want to tell you, I've quoted the Satmar Rebbe in Sheirim, it happened to me already twice, and quoting the Satmar Rebbe, someone yelled out from the audience, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, from people. I understood why immediately. Understand me, Danny, because these were people. One man came over to me afterwards and apologized, but he said, my whole family was wiped out because they listened to the Rebbe, and I was a bit of a Kivinik, I was a rebel, and I came in Aliyah, and I'm the only one alive today from my whole family. I say that there are many examples. So I have to tell you, in order to survive, it's a real problem. And in order to survive, I go with a very simple shita. When it comes to learning, you take the person for his knowledge, for his learning, for his insight, for his godliness and Torah, for his saintliness. When it comes to contemporary hashkafa, we're only human beings. Sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong. Could be we're wrong many times. And I have a lot to say in this, and a lot of... I heard from my own Rebbe, I have unbelievable Divrei Torah. But the fact that Rav Avadia said what he said last night does not influence my awe and respect for him as the greatest posek alive in this generation. Period. And that's the way I approach it. And I think that's the only way to approach it. And you should know I'm extremely angry at the Frankel Rambam. Why am I upset with the Frankel Rambam? I use it, I have to tell you, every time, and I use it every day. You know, I do my recital, the shim, I prepare, whatnot. I have to do my own learning. I'm heading for a second Siyum Shas, Baruch Hashem. I'm in Me'ila right now. And so I'm learning every day, and I look up every Rambam and whatever. I had to look up a Rambam for this class as well. Yeah, for this class today. So I used the Frankel. You should know they did a terrible thing. When it came to their indexing, all the Rishonim and Achronim who come after the Rambam and discuss the Rambam, they left out Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk. And that is a crime against Torah. It represents a falschkeit, a falseness. And it hurts me to pick up the Frankel Rambam because I am appalled by falseness. My whole life is Torah. My life has been an open book. My whole commitment is Torah. I challenge anyone to find falschkeit in Aaron Rakefet's deportment for the last Kainain Hara, very soon to be 73 years. So I have to tell you, but that's my approach, and I want to reiterate it because I consider it very important. And the Rav Avadra in particular, this morning, guys like us are going crazy. Last week, guys like me were going crazy. In other words, with Yehuda Bishomron, and wherever I went, I heard maledictions. And I told them, you know, look into the Rav's drasha on Yosef Yechon, and you'll understand how to approach these matters. Now, that's number one, just a general statement. Number two, looking at Matan. Did you get my message about? Okay, very important message. Okay, follow through. It'll open doors. Okay, now number two for the class. So, you know, last week I was showing you the defense that Reuven Omar makes to try to show that the Besamim Rosh is a legitimate sefer. Danny Wolf was so impressed that he said to me, he's convinced me. All right, I'll show Danny Wolf today that don't be so convinced. But nevertheless, he's making a legitimate defense. So among everything else I showed you last week, Rav Omar, and I still don't know where he's at today. I asked around our other faculty members. No one has heard of him. Of course, it's many years since he did the work. I hope he's still alive and well. So he quotes Sfarim that came out, and people laughed at them at first. And among the examples, he quoted the Chaye Yadam. So one of my Talmidim evidently spoke with Reb David Miller and was telling him about this shir. So Reb David came to me, and he said the Chaye Adam was laughed at. How can that be? He was, and Reb David, I told you this in class, that before the Mishnah Brura, all of Litvisha Jewry depended upon the Chaye Adam and the Chochmat Adam. So I went back to the to Reb Reuven Omar, and I saw his footnote, and I looked it up. I'll tell you a little story in a second. And I made a copy for Rav David Miller, and he was like, we were overjoyed with what I discovered. But first, I got to give you a drop of background. You've all heard of the Shtei Chemet. The Shtei Chemet was Rav Chaim Chizkiyahu Medini, who was the Rav of Chevron about 130 years ago. I don't know if there was a greater bucky in modern times. The man's knowledge was encyclopedic. It was like Rav Avadya Yosef. He wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. Later in life, they put out 10 volumes of the Shtei Chemet, and it's literally an unbelievable treasure chest of Mekorot from Rishonim and Achronim and newspapers and everything he saw. And the downside is, whenever someone mentions to me, look up something in the Shtei Chemet, I start to shake. Why? No, you can tell me why. It's very hard to find. There is not a proper index. Maybe one of you will devote himself to coming out with a computerized index to the Shtei Chemet. You have no idea what you would be doing. It should be, Gil, you eat rice on Pesach. You have to come out with a, you understand what I'm saying? Because you would resuscitate such a posek. You don't know who the man was. And he knew everything. Ashkenazim, Sfardim, Eidotim, Mizrahim. He knew absolutely everything. Anyway, Excuse me?
Has it been reset?
Yeah.
So you just press a button now and they can index it.
I don't know. You got to check that. Yehuda knows more than I do about computers. I'm an emergency writer, and he's a great scholar in computers. Anyway, but Nachum, listen carefully. There are two editions of the Steichemet. They're attempts, but a real fabulous index we do not have. Anyway, I take a look, and Reuven Omar quotes the Steichemet. Believe it or not, I found it on my first try. So it's in the Klalei HaPoskim, Siman Tet Vav, subdivision Lamed Bet. And he tells an unbelievable story. He says, talks about the Chaya Yadam, the Chachmat Adam, and he says these are very important Svarim that have captivated the Jewish people today. Everyone cites them and everyone paskins like him. And he says, it wasn't always like that. And he tells the following story. He says, one time I was giving a psak, a lecture, and I was talking about halacha l'maisa, and I quoted from the Chaye Adam. And he says, Ish Ploni, he doesn't give the name because it's negative, started yelling at me, how do you quote the Chaye Adam? Who was he? He was a socher, he was a businessman. Remember I told you he ran a grocery. That's who you're quoting as a posek, a businessman? And could you imagine, he cut the steichemet off, so the steichemet goes on and says, yes, he was a businessman, but this was a businessman who was a tremendous London. And he goes on to show his pekid is unbelievable. He gives you two columns of achronim who quote the Chaye Adam halacha l'maisa. So, what can I tell you? A businessman he was. By the way, like all big talmidei chacham who were businessmen, he went bankrupt. And the last 15, 20 years of his life, he was a Moritz Tzedek in Vilna. By then already, he didn't go back into business. And this story repeats itself 100 times over. It's the famous story. I think I've said this to the Kollel over the years, but it's worth repeating if you haven't heard it. If I said it this year, cut me off. But you know, Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan Specht, I just was reading about it today. I told you, I'm rereading Making of a Gadol, with the second edition with a fine tooth, because I read the first edition, I wrote a whole article, and now I'm reading the second edition. So he also raises the problem. Reb Yitzchak Chanan Specter, we all know the name, our yeshiva's named in his memory. I yet grew up where people had pictures of Reb Yitzchak Chanan on the wall in the East Bronx. We revered the man's memory. No, he had a son, Reb Tzvi Hirsch Rabinovitz, and his son succeeds him in the rabbinate in Kovna. They say about the son that he was bigger than the father. The world doesn't know of the son because he didn't publish Svarim, but people say until today he was bigger than his father. But his father had a big reputation because he had published Svarim. No, can anyone ask a question? I just said something to you. Reb Yitzchok Chanan Specter has his son, Reb Hirsch Rabinovitz. Oh, yeah. So, right? Michael, a good question? I heard a different story. That Reb Hirsch Rabinovitz grew up in his father's house. He saw all the aggravation of Rav Hans. He decided, Malil Tzarazu, he's not going to be a Rav. He's going to go into business. No, he went into business, a great Talmud Chacham. He went bankrupt. In order to start over in Russia, when you went bankrupt, the Russian law was you had to take a new name. It's like you're starting over again. You're not the person I was. Shinui Makom, Shinui Shem, Shinui Mazel. So he took his mother's maiden name. And that's how he comes to Rav Tzvi Hirsch Rabinovitz. All right, you can check it out. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but the story makes sense. I know that in Adam Guttel in America, I don't want to mention his name, his son-in-law was a student of mine, people still know him, a gon sheba ga'aynim. But he was such a gon, he couldn't hold the position. So in the mid-60s, he decided to become a stockbroker. He's going into business, he's going to make money. To make a long story short, he ran away to Israel in 69, one step ahead of real trouble with the IRS. He had gone bankrupt, the stocks, this, that. Baruch Hashem, he was never indicted. But there is a message here. If you have a Goynisha cup, hold by learning. Don't try to become a businessman, a stockbroker, etc. Okay, now, and let me pick up where we left off last week. So there's no question, I told you, you know, his father wrote a tremendous letter, Reb Shaul Berlin, his father of Zvi Hirsch, defending him, and that people were angry at him because he took a strong stand against Reb Rafael Cohn. I read to you from the Hakdama of Reb Zvi Hirsch himself, when he talks about the terrible life he had, and how everyone hates him, and they find fault with him, and that it's all chinam, and there's no reason, it's all lashav, and how this manuscript is accurate, and how he bought it, how he came upon it. And Reb Reuven Omar defends him, and with all the problems, the style of writing, who says everyone writes the same way, the contradictions between the Rush and the Tshuva Parash, what we have printed from the Rush, and he says, there are many contradictions in the Rush, nothing to do with the Besamim Rosh, it has to do with, he wrote Tshuva over such a long period, he could contradict himself, and then of course we ended off the class with all the strange psukim that have happened over the millennium, and nevertheless, we don't say that Rabbi Lezer Meir Vardun is a plagiarist or is not reliable, even though we had a shita called Avad Zichro in Heter Aguna, which everyone dismissed at the time in the 13th century, at the end of the 13th century. As I mentioned last week, as God will spare me, I'll come back one day and spend 2.5 years on only two words, Avad Zichro. So, if that's the case, why do we dismiss the Besamim Rosh? And we ended off with the last example, the classic example, rice on Pesach. No one is going to say that the Tzviyash Ashkenazi was an Eisvaf, a bum, a pushtak, a poya, call him what you wish, but he was mate rice on Pesach. Fine. So I just want to say that Danny will see between the lines there's one refutation here. It's true that many Gedolim had isolated psukim that were questionable. The problem with the Besamim Rosh is, I'm going to show you at least 20 tshuvot that have dynamite in them. You understand? The man evidently had an agenda. And that's what Reuven Amar, does not comprehend. But nevertheless, Baruch Hashem, he defends him royally. Now, I'll show you something else. That Reuven Omar, yes, Mendel.
The Chacham Tzvi actually said that Ashkenazim could, or he said, I
wish I could be mat there, and he accused the Rabbanim, he said, because we are machmen, have this crazy minhag, we eat chametz on Pesach. And I explained to you why, because everything was hand-baked, and if you've ever seen, believe me, if you've ever gone into a slaughterhouse, you won't eat meat again. Take my word for it. I know two Rabbanim, one from England, one from Australia. I met them two different times, and we're sitting at this beautiful, each time at a beautiful Suda, Kisudat Shlomo HaMelech B'Sha'ato, wine and dine, white glove service, and they're not eating meat. So I asked them, why aren't you eating meat? I got the same answer from two famous Rabbanim. If you would have gone into Schlachthäuser the way we did, you wouldn't eat meat either. So I can assure you, if you saw, and I've seen the way hand matzahs baked, and you know, they're shoving, they're pushing, and they're looking, and you got to remember, you have to turn it over, and you got to watch the clock, and never, believe me, you wouldn't eat hand matzah again. But today we have a solution. In those days, if you didn't eat rice, you had to eat hand matzah. Yes, Michael, have you seen hand matzah baked?
But
Michael, Baruch Hashem, Yisrael, Kedoshim Hain, they wanna live the way their parents lived. I also, one year, Chabad gave me hand matzah. A few years ago, I'm walking on the street, they come over to me, and they say, they think I'm a guy, I'm walking with my baseball hat on, they're giving out, I say, no, this is free hand matzah, chafshi, chinam, the shame mitzvah. What can I do? I took it home. I didn't use it in the Seder, but I used it as part of the Seder. I mean, what can I tell you? All right. There's a whole machleket about the rub.
Yeah, we all know it's a fortune.
Right. So, Baruch Hashem. Your question is a good question.
People want to feel pious.
People, whatever. Rabbi Reuben says they want to feel pious. I can only tell you. One second. I can only tell you I'm in firm ground because I heard the Rav once explode when Shoen said hand matzah to him. He said hand matzah chometz, and I remember I heard the Rav explode. And yet, if you'll ask anyone what did the Rav eat Leil HaSeder, people will swear he ate machine matzah shmura. And other people will swear he ate hand matzah shmura because his grandfather ate hand matzah shmura. So go and argue. I don't know. I was never at the Rav Seder. Yeah, what did you want to...
Specifically, were they upset about it?
Oh, no, if you know about hand matzah.
No, going back to the Rebbeim and the slaughterhouse.
Oh, and it's the blood, the pressure of you got to shek the animal, there's no time to do a proper bedika, the chalaf, there's no time, everything is working quickly, pressure, whatever. I'm sure the blood is a big factor too.
Not
halakhic, but it, what can I tell you? Yitzchak, relax. You missed the start of class. There was a statement that's very important that you should pick up. It deals with something we spoke about. Okay, now, he now brings more proof to the summer rush, but you're going to see it's circular reasoning. And let me give you an example. One of the questions that the Summer Rosh, and we'll see it inside. I'm going to start later. We're going to go one by one, the actual Summer Rosh, and see what he wants. But, for instance, we shave on Chol HaMoed. Why do we shave on Chol HaMoed? How can we shave? So much has been written about this. There's Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank wrote. We'll talk about shaving, but not now. But one thing I want to tell you. Everyone quotes the Rabbeinu Tam, that the Rabbeinu Tam, you see, why can't you shave Chol HaMoed? Those of you who have studied Masechet Moed Katan, Shem Yikanes Liyontav Menuval, that it seems in those days they didn't shave every day. But it seems they did shave. If you take the Pashtus of the Mishnah, it seems they did shave. But we don't want you to leave the shaving for Chol HaMoed. So you have to shave Erev Yontav. You cannot shave Chol HaMoed. No, what about today when we shave every day? Why can't we shave on Chol HaMoed? Because we're shaving every day. So the Nota B'Yehuda is quoting a Rabbeinu Tam that if you shave every day and you shaved Erev Yontav, you would be allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed. They're talking with a guy shaving you, but out of that came the big heterif today. Now, where do you find that Rabbeinu Tam? That Rabbeinu Tam is nowhere. The only place you find it is in the Tur. The Tur quotes the Rabbeinu Tam. I cannot tell you how much literature there is. Is there such a... Hold on one second, Gili. Is there such a Rabbeinu Tam? Isn't there a Rabbeinu Tam? Where do you get the Rabbeinu Tam from? So... The B'Samim Rosh quotes the Rabbeinu Tam to the same effect. Well, if it's a forgery, what's the big deal? He knew what the Beit Yosef said. You know what the Tur said. He knew what the Tur quoted, so he quotes it. But Rav Amar says, you see from here that there's an additional proof that the Tur is correct. Rabbeinu Tam did say you can shave in Chol HaMoed. How do I know it? Rav Amar says. The B'Samim Rosh says so. You follow? It's circular reason. So what? So what if the B'Samim Rosh says so? It's a forgery. But he takes it. He has more examples. I don't want to bore you with more examples, but he says, you see, Here's a shita that everyone claimed may not be accurate, but the Rush is saying it. If the Rush is quoting Rabbeinu Tam, then certainly the Tor can quote Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, Gili, yeah, what did you want to ask?
In the Lord of the Buddha's Tshuva about the shaving,
right.
Is there some sort of like cryptic line, like I won't say my reasoning?
And the only place, no, the Nadir says it's only a bidiyebet for a poor, it's not for everyone, he was not happy about it. But the cryptic line, the only Tshuva I know where there's a cryptic line that you may be referring to, is the Reb Chaim Halberstam in the Divrei Chaim, when he writes why he asks machine matzah and insists upon hand matzah, he writes, I quote verbatim, "Vahatam kamus imade," that the reason is hidden. I don't want to write it. And on those three words of Reb Chaim Halberstam, I can give a two-hour shiur what people said he meant. Do you understand? I think that's what you're referring to. It could be the Nod Behuda wrote it too. But I'll tell you, if the Nod Behuda did write it, check it out. If those words are there, you just remind me again when I talk about shaving, I'll explain to you what the Nod Behuda meant. Okay? You want an explanation on the machine mats? I'll give you two explanations, very quickly. One, Vatam Kamusim Madi, it has to do again. It's Kabbalah, that there's certain sins that every man has, seminal admission, keri. So there was a, in the Kabbalah, the sweat we put into baking the matzah is a kapara for the fact that we can be about keri. So that's why he said he didn't want to mention it because it's not a nice thing. That's probably the pshat. And I've seen the... Who calls it?
The Mishnah Berurah brings it.
And I'm saying this, that's probably
the Shlach.
The Shlach. The Shlach. Could be. You follow? That's the, others have said very simply, and it may be with prophetic insight, or it may be we're making it up because of the fact we're alive and kicking in the 21st century. Look, to quote Rakefet, Yiddishkeit has become so easy, it's a joke. Leil HaSeder, Yerushalayim. The matzah tastes like cake. I had matzah this year, shmura matzah, made by, it has an OU, the rabbinate of Petach Tikva, whatever. Forget the name of the brand. Like cake. I couldn't believe what I'm eating. The wine, you have, they make a low, a sweet wine with low alcohol content. It is Tam Gan Eden, you can't get drunk. You can have grape juice. I hold grape juice lachatchila because I've seen people get drunk. It's fabulous. The lettuce, you buy Gush Katif, in 10 minutes you wash off 100 stalks. You never had it so good, you understand? No, if this is Yiddishkeit so easy, once it's so easy, we don't take it seriously. The whole attitude becomes, you know, Kaliachiyad, it's easy, we're part of the big world. That's what the Divrei Chaim was worried about. The harabanya, the schwitz, the sweat. Harabanya, I don't know how to say that in any other language. Nu, can anyone help me? Yiddish and to the what, the work, the harabanya.
The
hustle and bustle. Okay, you got the idea? So that's what he may have meant. I'm not the Divrei Chaim, I can't be sure. With the Nod Behuda, I'll tell you exactly what he meant if he said that. Okay, check it out.
I remember, but I think Rav Simon, like we're learning the halakhot of Kevin and Beard, and he said the reason why maybe the Nod Behuda meant it was because if the hair grows to a certain length, and then when you shave it, it's all right. But
We'll talk about that. But I have much deeper. Rabbi Simon may be absolutely correct, but I have something much deeper that fits right in. But hold it off now. It's not for now. I just want to finish up the introduction because I have to show you something unbelievably fascinating. Now, so then he goes on with a whole list of Achronim who quote the Besamim Rosh and Sfarim that quote the Besamim Rosh. At the very end of the introduction, he gives you his life story. Essentially, it's everything we spoke about, his marriage, the first rabbinate, Frankfurt, not on mine, but Frankfurt am Oder, which was the smaller Frankfurt, the big outcry, his divorce, and the way he wandered the rest of his life, and he couldn't find a real place. Achrit Hayamim, As I told you, he winds up in London, where his brother is the chief rabbi with a very assimilated name. What's the name? Hart. Hart is
Lion.
Hart Lion. Hart Lion. His brother is the chief rabbi. His brother already is traditional, and he is literally the first chief rabbi of the British Empire. And that's where he winds up, that's where he dies at the age of 55, and that's where he is buried. Now, you want to see something amazing. And I have to give Rav Reuven Amar credit that he published this and didn't exclude it, didn't censor it out. He publishes it without comment. We won't have to comment too much, I think it speaks for itself. At the very end of the introduction, after all his defense, he reproduces the will of Rav Shaul Berlin. The will takes up about 40% of the printed page. I'll read it, it's in Hebrew, but I'll read it in English. And just listen to what Rav Shaul Berlin says. And he says, I don't know when my end will be. I'm wandering from country to country. I'm going to go very far away. He's from England, which in those days to go from Germany to England was a long journey. I don't know if anyone will know who I am, and therefore I'm leaving this will, and I carry the will with me in my pocket. And if I should die and they take the will out of my pocket, I plead with them to fulfill everything I've written. And he says, anything I have in my pockets, any of my earthly possessions, send on to my father, the famous Av Beit Din of Berlin. And then he says, if you find my letters in my kappa was a, I believe it's a kappa box that they carried with them, what we would call a safe. In Israel, many people have a safe in their home for documents. I know when my grandsons come home from the army, they take apart their guns and they put the main part of the gun into the safe. All right. In the copper box, he says, if you find my letters or my writings, chas v'chalila, you should read them. Just take it all, seal the box, and send it on to my father. And then he says, whichever way I die, whatever clothes I'm wearing, bury me in that clothes. We're not finished yet. Wherever I die, bury me in the nearest Jewish cemetery, but bury me far away from any other Jewish grave. Don't eulogize me. Listen to everything I'm writing. If you don't listen, God will not forgive you. And I know from all of Shas and Poskim that the only thing a person cannot command before his death is to say, don't bury me. Ain't shomim lo. I'm not telling you not to bury me, but I'm telling you, in my clothes, far away from any other Jewish grave. Eila divrei ma nefesh. These are the words of a bitter soul. Asher hishkohu Hashem kos chatkareliya l'sheicha u'l'rabch. And he says, this is the words of a bitter soul that God has made him drink of a bitter potion. And he signs off, I trust in the Lord, but I have suffered. Ani hakatan sha'ul. And it tells you a relative of his, when he died in London, a relative of his copied the tzava'a, and that's how we have it. Now, what does this tzava'a tell you? How many of you I've studied psychology. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but to me the interpretation is so simple. It stares at you. He knew he was different. He lived in an era where enlightenment was beginning, but the Rabbanim fought it bitterly. You heard Rabbi Avadya Yosef last night. All of Israel, and now they tell me it's in America. It's all over.
I didn't hear.
What did he do?
I didn't hear.
You didn't hear news today?
No, not yesterday, no, not this morning.
You didn't hear news? You no, might think no. It didn't matter that Iran wants to... didn't matter...
Bring me up to date.
That Iran didn't... Rabbi Avadya came out against Rabbi Amsalan that a Jewish boy should not go to work. He has to sit and learn his whole life. Understand? And he Yitzchak, control yourself, relax. Because you missed the first 5 minutes of the class where I gave a very powerful statement. When you've heard that statement, you'll understand how to react. But Rav Avadya, all right, he can read. Not now, I don't have to read it in class. Rav Avadya was in top form, and for a man of 90 years old, he was crystal clear. I got to give these recorders credit. They picked them up beautifully. And he beat the heck out of Rabbi Amsalan.
So
am I happy? I want Rabbi Amsalan to come to the shir and join the kollel here. I give him my chair. The man's a gadol shebegadolim. But you see, Rav Avadya is like a rav of 250 years ago. And if you have this open-mindedness, this poor Rav Shaul Berlin had no place to go. What can he do? Where can he go? There's no YU. There's no Chovet Torah. There's no Lander College. Where can he go? Where can he express himself? The fact that he insisted, bury me. Remember, there's no Dindi or Raita that you bury a person in Tachrichen. The whole story of Tachrichen, if you're familiar with the Gemara, familiar with the Sugya, it all begins to keep people equal. Remember?
Yeah, because, right.
Because,
it was a Tekana.
To keep people equal.
Because
David Pardo comes from... He comes from the valley. What can I tell you? He shops in Rodeo Drive.
He wants to be buried in Amani.
Right, he wants to be buried in an Amani suit. You understand?
The only way to go.
If Ryan comes from Moscow, Ribbono Shel Olam, he's buried with nothing there. The communists took it all. But look what he says. Bury me in my clothing and bury me far away from any other Jews. What does this tell you? Gentlemen, he was different. He thought differently. His outlook, his commitment. I can't interpret it any other way. If anyone
maybe
thinks
he was playing suicide.
I told you that there is a room, and I said someone should do a doctorate and check it out thoroughly. You have to check.
No medical evidence.
You have to find what's available in the Chevra Kadisha in London, what records they have from the burial ground. It's 200 years ago, I believe so. He's buried next to... Find out. You have to go to London. And when I'm there next, I'm going to ask around.
This is not like the police in Philadelphia doing a cold case 30 years ago.
No, this is 200 years ago. Say the rumor, one of the rumors I heard as a kid was that he did commit suicide. But this document is overwhelming, and it shows you the tragedy of the man's life. And you see it in stark contrast. Look last night. Rav Avadya, could you imagine you go before the world and what do you say? Our Jewish boys and girls have the finest Jewish education. They cannot use internet. We're worried stiff if they use internet, they'll become sex offenders, sex morons, okay? They cannot go to school and learn English or mathematics or computers. If they do that, they will leave Torah. Now, I can go on and on. They cannot serve in the army, although the Gemara says, a mukhamit mitzvah, it's a chiyav, and even the chatan v'kala, to serve in the army. And okay? Av malameh et b'no umanut. You can go on and on and on and on. And it just, this is Yiddishkeit, it gnaws me. But I have a choice today. I don't have to live like that. Baruch Hashem, I have nothing to be ashamed of my own family. I have nothing to be ashamed of most of my students. No Rebbe succeeds 100% Bizman Hazaz. We'll talk about in our Monday class. There are reasons why. But percentage-wise, I am doing well. Do you understand? Today we have a choice. I don't have to choke. I don't have to. I can say, Rav Amselin, welcome to the world of Torah that I was taught by my Rebbe Moran Harav Yosef Sultov HaLevi Soloveitchik. The Rebbe would be hysterical to hear words like this. You can't go to college. You can't do this. Everything in life is a challenge. Uvarchata b'chayim. The internet is a challenge? Of course it's a challenge. But driving the car is a challenge. How many murderers do we have with kippah on their head when they drive a car? You walk on the street, you see yeshiva boys smoking. I couldn't help myself. I said, that guy, a moron came over to me in Shari Chesed, wanted a light. I said, the guy walked away. I don't know if he was laughing at me or what, you know, but Baruch Hashem. No, he walked away. He walked away. I couldn't help myself. I've done it many. One time, two American kids there. Then I was once in Los Angeles, a kid of 25, no profession. I said, go to college, you're only 25. He said, oh, if my Rebbeim would only speak the way you do. So I said, fine, do Rebbeim. No one has a monopoly not to go to college, not to have a profession, not to have self-respect. I come from a different world. The Rav, Isha Halacha, leave out Rav Hirsch. I was raised by the Rav. Rav Hirsch, what are we talking about here? But we have choice today. Rav Shaul Berlin, who was a Gadol Shebet Torah, but he had no choice. It is a tragedy. And that comes back to my introductory lecture. Remember when I quoted the Zohar? Hakol talui b'mazal afilu sefer Torah shebeheichal. When you're born, depends where you're born. And many a kid, could you imagine you're growing up in Chassidic Gur? If you know anything about the Gur Chassidim, they have, I don't know what word to use, but it's a very negative attitude towards sex. In my opinion, this is not a Torah attitude in the year 2011. They have hang-ups. It's terrible. Terrible. No, most Chassidim live with it. You have women, men who can't live with it. They leave everything. They leave everything. It's very, very sad. We have a miracle when we can convince them you don't have to throw the baby out with the water. Join our world. An open world. A Torah Umada world, a Torah V'derech Eretz world, a Torah V'avoda world, a Nachal Haredi world. Today you have a choice. Then you did not. And that last will and testament is an overwhelming document that speaks for itself. Okay, I've reached the high. We're going to begin now. Yeah. Excuse me, I've answered. Okay. Michael, what's up? Okay. Now. All this was by way of introduction. Now I want to show you the tshuvot that have created the tremendous controversy. And let's understand the word of background, and now the Nodu Yehuda, will, if he does say that, Tam Kamusim Madei, you'll understand the explanation in a few minutes. Gentlemen, when did all this take place? This took place when Jews were stepping out of the ghetto. Now, there's some very serious questions to be asked. What is Torah civilization all about? You'll all agree with me that part of Torah civilization is Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, Yud Gimel Icharim, Talmud Torah, Tefillah. All right, I think I've said it all. Tell me, what about the way we look, the way we dress? Is there a Torah attitude towards dress? Have you seen some of the Balei Tshuva in Yerushalayim, in Tzfat? You can see them occasionally at the Kotel. There'll be American kids coming to the Kotel wearing robes like Avraham Avinu. Danny, have you seen it or not?
Yeah,
you'll see it. Go to the Kotel, go to Tzfat, you'll see it. Tell me, are they better Jews than we are? And I want to tell you, this is a very serious question. Should it have been written? How do we have a right to wear this clothes? Look into Rabbi Chaim Yaakov Weinberg, look into my notes when I learned Sanhedrin with the Rabbi. All right. Obviously, to give you the answer, I'll say Hamaslake, it's a very simple answer. There's universal lifestyles that apply to all human beings. And there's nothing wrong with dressing with Western dress if this has nothing to do with religion, but this is what we call Western dress. And this is why I objected to the criticism of my interview in Jewish press that if I don't wear a black hat, I'm not dressed like a Jew. And did Avraham Avinu wear a black hat? Did Moshe Rabbeinu wear a black hat? All right, you have various dress styles, but we can't say that a black hat is Jewish dress. It's Chassidish, fine, it's identity. Jewish dress? This is the way we dress today. Universal. Western. Okay? Now, but let's go a step further. What about a beard? What about peyot? We all know Los Atakibu, Patro, Sheikhan. So we can all make a case. These are peyot. I have even more. The Rambam, as you know, would be like up to here. This is like Rashi, up to here. Maybe I'm an even a little bit longer, the cheekbone. Fine. What about real peyot? What about a beard? And it seems that Jews in the ghetto, when we're talking about 1600 into 1700, at least in Eastern Europe, and it could be as well in the Sephardic centers, not in the more enlightened places like the Netherlands, but it could be in all these ghettos, Jews walked with beards. Now, they're coming out of the ghetto. And you face that tremendous challenge to use the rubric of the Rav, Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. On one hand, we're gerim, we are Jews, we are different. On the other hand, we are toshavim, we are universal citizens, we are human beings. And now, the beard, modernity, the Western world. Everyone shaves. Important to shave. A modern man shaves. And what the Noda B'Yehuda was afraid of, if we permit shaving, and you can make a very strong case to permit shaving, because as I told you, you see from the Gemara that if you get out of the whole sugyas and moed katan, if you get out of jail and chol hamoed, and you couldn't shave erev yontif, are you allowed to shave in chol hamoed? And why do you have to shave in erev yontif? And all these questions. But what does it show you? That Jews shaved then. And shaving was considered something good, something fine, something hygienic, whatever you wish to call it. But in the ghetto, no one had a beard. Now you're going to come out of the ghetto and you're going to shave? Let me come back to my lectures on Chadash Asua Min HaTorah. Lectures that Yehuda heard in 71 and the Kollel heard maybe 6-7 years ago. Let me tell you a story that I didn't tell Yehuda Singer because I didn't know it then. But you will never forget this story. I had a revered neighbor for 40 years of my sojourn in Israel, Rabbi Yehoshua Hutner, who was married to Reb Shmuel Soloveitchik's widow, Batsheva Ziv Soloveitchik Hutner. Two people that I revered, Zichronim Levracha. Rav Hutner told me the following story. He was raised in a small shtetl. His grandfather was the Rav, and he... teenager, he goes to Warsaw, big city. And Warsaw, if you saw the documentary on the Rav, a guy named Rav Kepit speaks about Warsaw and modernity, what the Rav was exposed to there. And he goes into a big clothing store and he buys modern shirts with what do you call this? Stays. You know, I don't have it in the. It keeps the collar straight.
Right.
He brings the shirts back to his little shtetl.
Right.
His grandmother sees the shirts and she starts to cry. And she says to me, Yoshua, Yoshua, I have to rip kriyah on you. Today it's mutton shirts. Tomorrow you'll be Machalo Shabbos. And the day afterwards you leave religion altogether. That was the fear. Anything new? Assuming a Torah. You've all been exposed to that. Talk to a guy from Lakewood. Talk to a guy from Panovich. Talk to a Gerich Chassid. Talk to a Belzer Chassid. Their whole lifestyle is predicated on keeping us distinctly Jewish. So you have to understand, shaving is not so much of a halachic question. It's a question of who am I? Am I a ger or am I a toshav? And what, you with me, Gil? What, the no, the Behuda was afraid. Monday you shave, Tuesday you're Machalos Shabbos, Wednesday you're a communist, and by Thursday, you've totally left the Jewish people. That's why this was a loaded issue. Hold on, hold on. I want to show you the Besamim Rosh. Okay? I want to quote the Tshuva. Shelet the Tshuva, Besamim Rosh, Yud Chet. And remember, he's putting this into the words of the Rosh. The truth is, the Rush lived at a time when shaving was never a problem. The question didn't come up. They knew what they were doing. But either they shaved, didn't shave, shaved for Yontif, shaved once a month, whatever they did was the lifestyle. But they weren't coming out of the ghetto. It's a burning issue now. But he puts it into the hands of the Summer Rush. And it's just fabulous what he does. He has a Mora Hara, a Rav, writing to the Rush and telling him what he paskened. And he tells the Rush, so-called, when I say the Rush, remember, it's if you accept the Besamim Rosh to be accurate. He's writing to the Rush that a certain person came to him and he had a tremendous fever and his beard, the flesh under the beard was burning. And the doctors told him he must take a razor and cut his beard off. And the Rav answered him, you cannot do it unless the doctor tells you it is pikuach nefesh. If it's not the Kuach Nefesh, you cannot do it, even if a Gentile will do it for you. And that's the question the Rush, according to the Besamim Rosh, received from a rabbi. Then comes the tshuva of the Rush. And the Rush tells him, you did wrong, you didn't answer correctly, goes into a whole analysis of the Sugya and Shavuot, Daf Bet Amid Aleph, Daf Bet Amid Bet, Daf Gimel Amid Aleph. And it goes into a whole analysis. There's a Tosfot there, Divrei Hamakil, I'll give you the Tosfot. Divrei Hamakil, Zakan Shtayim Mikan. It's talking about, you know, there are five Yisurim where you can, when you shave, one, two, three, four, five. There's a whole question in the Gemara. Hamakif Vahanikaf. Have you ever studied the Sugya? In other words, if someone shaves you, you are the Nikaf, shaving me. The Makiv is the one using the razor. All right? Makiv and Anikav? There's no Heter? Jews? What about if one of them is a guy? The prohibition? What's wrong with a Jew shaving a guy? Nothing. What's wrong with a guy shaving a Jew? You have to have, in order for there to be an Issa D'Oraita, it has to be both a Jewish shaver and a Jew being shaved.
And
what did you say?
You're paying him. He's doing it for you.
It doesn't matter, but he's a non-Jew. He's a non-Jew. He's a pagan. He's a non-Jew. Don't we have a Shabbos guy? What does that have to do with a Shabbos guy? Didn't Elvis Presley? What do you mean? Elvis Presley got paid to be a Shabbos guy. But this is exactly what the Rush answers. That the man is in pain. You don't have to be a Sakonet Nefashat. Let the guy shave him. It's a makif who's not Jewish. So if there's a bit already of a need, the rush is matir. And this tshuva raised a tremendous outcry. What's wrong with it? He has lungus. The guy is in pain. All right, it's not sakonet nefashot. People have faces that are all broken out from a beard. It scratches. It itches. Right? It's not sakonet nefashot. But let him shave. Pay the guy. Why were they worried? Could be it's a curveball. It's a curveball. Shaving is good. Shaving is wonderful. Encourage people to shave. That's the current that is underneath this tshuva. Now, hold on one second.
Going around unshaved?
At that time?
Yeah.
No, outside of the ghetto, an intelligent guy shaved. That's exactly what they were worried about, that the Jew wants to assimilate, like the guy. Look at pictures of Lessen. Look at pictures of the famous Gentiles. They didn't have beards at that time. Talking late 1700s. No, but just watch what happens here. So in this tshuva of the Rush, you get the feeling, you know, lachatchila, it's better not to shave, but b'dieved, if you have to ask a guy to shave you, fine. Let the guy shave you. Then you come to his super commentary, Chasa the Chasana, right? And there, the Besamim Rosh, meaning Rav Shaul Berlin, it's his super commentary, he writes that I disagree with the Rush. He says it's a bidyeved, and I say that in a case like this, where the guy is slightly indisposed, afilu lachatchila mutar lomar lagoy. Even lachatchila, you can say to a guy, shave me, and let him shave you. And this is one of the tshuvot that you, if you understand the background, the environment, the circumstances, the milieu in which it was asked, you can understand what's happening here. You are piercing the tent of isolation. Yeah, Gili.
I'm not sure I understand. One of the issues is that shaving with a razor is all right. Another one's the shkafic issue of not having a beard. Like,
right.
They're just
right.
Without doing the d'oraita. So why would you say the tachila? Why would you just say the tachila? You could do it without a razor.
No, without a razor, they didn't have. And the way they shaved then was with a razor.
Scissors or like the cream.
We'll come to that. There's another tshuva. You'll see. No, there were no creams yet, but with scissors, there is a sfarah to cut it down and not leave enough to bend back, and then there's no isidiyaraita. That's what you're referring to from Rabbi Simon. But that's not in this tshuva. We'll come to it. You follow? But what's now? I thought you were going to ask me something else, but I'll make your question. Let me build upon what you just said. Okay? So you can say, Rebbe, why are you making such a federal case? Why are you bringing in shaving, not shaving? Rabbi Reuven's going to go home and go to the computer and punch in shaving, history of shaving, and see pictures of people with beards, without beards. Take it at face value. The Rush got a question of a guy that had pimples on his face, scars on his face, and he wanted to shave, get rid of the beard, so that it wouldn't aggravate his skin condition. That's a wonderful question. And you may be right. There's only one problem. I'm showing you one tshuva after another where, you know the expression in Hebrew? Hakelev kavua. How would you say that in English? Hakelev kavua. Avu is the hun bagrot. How would you say that in English? Is there an expression like that in English? It smells. One, you follow me, Gili? One tshuva after another that you see there's something beneath the surface. If it only be one or two, I can say, Rakefet, keep your mouth shut. What are you learning such shekels for? You could then go to Rabbi all the people who wrote about them in Summer Rosh. What are you getting involved with such shekels? Ah, but when you find 10, 15, 18 tshuvot that are a total reflection of Moses Mendelssohn and coming out of the ghetto and life out of the ghetto, wait a minute. There's a dog hidden in the ground. Is there an expression like that in English?
No.
Yeah, but a fo hakelev kavur. It's a Yiddish expression. Avu is the hun pagrodin. And that expression translated into Hebrew. A fo kavur hakelev. You follow me? How would you say it in English? It smells fishy? Okay, I'll accept that. Now we're coming to the high point. Now you're going to see something. It'll shake you up because it's literally a problem we have until today. Yes, Mendel.
At least what he was giving the appearance of doing is arguing on a Rishon.
Right, well, in a nice way, he's making a comment. You have a right, he differs with a Rishon. I'm not saying Lalacha, but if I would have been asked, I would have said even Lachat Chila. Yep, Seidah. That's why the Maneli Gerit rips the hell out of Rav Moshe, because he argues with great Achronim. All right. The Besamim Rosh was 400 years after the Rosh. All right, he's arguing with him. Fine. Yeah.
Do we have Shiva from this period where people take a really strong position on beards?
No, like that comes with the Noda Behuda. With the Noda Behuda, all hell breaks loose after the Noda Behuda's Shiva. You follow?
The
Noda Behuda is right after this. It's a few years after. It's right, Mamish, right. Right, no. You gotta go. You're gonna miss the big surprise. You're gonna miss. Regards home. Gentlemen, you're in the rabbinate today. You're not in Borough Park. You're not in Chugatin's Hills. You're in Allentown. You're in Yedemsville. You're in Moscow. There is nothing more boring than an Orthodox service. Right or wrong? Now you just think for a minute. You walk into shul Shabbos morning, 9 o'clock. You're going to finish 12:15. Half the people don't understand one word of the davening. It's a real challenge. And we're growing up in a world where a person is not going to say something he doesn't understand. I need not tell you what the Reform did to the prayer book. Not only that, look at the davening. All the brachot in the morning. The kavanot. Before you open your mouth already, if you say it properly, it's 20 minutes of davening right there. So in Israel, you all know every shul outside of Anglos who don't know they're in Israel, every shul begins with Baruch Shema, we'll put it that way. Hodu. If you daven with the Gaon, you begin with Baruch Shema. If you daven with the Sachsrad, you begin with Hodu. The Brachot, you say at home. Rabbis in America, this was a tremendous challenge. I know what I did in my shul. I understand that Lubavitch, they did it. I cut out all Mishnah Berachs. Right at the end of 7 Aliyot, then I made a Mishnah Berach Klali for everybody. But in cut it out. Cut down the time. The sermon becomes unbelievably important because at least that's in English. People can comprehend. In Israel, you have the same problem. The ketuvah. At a wedding. You go to a wedding, a chila. You go to a religious wedding, no one's listening anyway, everyone's talking. But you go to a chilani wedding, you start reading a ketuvah, the people are going to fall asleep. Who speaks Aramaic on a daily basis here? Right or wrong? Chada besultata. Moha. That word they know because it's an Arabic word, moha. But it's a real, you all know, these are real problems. The Hebrew translations of the Ketuvah, the rabbin in Jerusalem years ago, not now because it's a different rabbin today, they used to give you an abridged version to read in English. And that way you solve the problem. In Hebrew, I mean. Hebrew. The abridged version, not the letter, I was Masada edition.
They still give a Hebrew.
No, Hebrew, but not an abridged version. You understand? This is the difference. All right. Now. Okay, but say that the problems are real. Gentlemen, the Besamim Rose Chuvi Yutet. And now I speak from a critical point of view. Rav Shaul Berlin Matan had the chutzpah to put into the rush the concept. Cut the davening down. It's too long. And you see, this too is part of coming out of the ghetto. Because look what happens when a Jew comes out of the ghetto. Kol Zman, the Jew is in the ghetto. That's the way Jews daven. They have no idea that there's a different way to pray to God. My grandfather, my father's father, who took me to shul every Shabbos, he did not know the meaning of the words. But he knew how to daven. It never dawned upon him he has to know the meaning of every word. This is the way his father davened, the way his grandfather davened, the way he davened in the shtetl in Russia, in White Russia, before he came to America when he was 16, 17 years old. Never dawned upon him. Never was a problem. And he never entered the big world. He remained in America. He died in his 80s. He never could speak English. He worked in a bakery. Everyone spoke Yiddish. Pechter's Bakery. He never became part of the great America. My other grandfather used to, it's a famous story, every year when he wrote out taxes, let's say he owed the American government $200 for the year, he gave them an additional gift of $40, 20% he would add on, a gift to the American government that a Jew from Vilna, Vasat Gelerent in Volozhin, can be a contractor painter in the United States. And he gave an additional gift to the government. Jews now are coming out of the ghetto. Mendelssohn has non-Jewish friends. Mendelssohn knows what goes on in a church. Show me one church where the prayers are not in German. Even the Catholic Church, which retained the Mass in Latin, at least to when I grew up, you all know that they abolished that. That today, the Catholics are reformers. You can say the Mass in the language of the people. So you see the Jew coming out of the ghetto. This is before Reformed Judaism yet. But the problems are real. He sensed it. Rav Shaul Berlin already was caught between two worlds. And it's just amazing. He puts this into the words of the Rosh. And I'm quoting now from Besamim Rosh, Yud Tet. And he says, you're telling me in your city they have a custom. Listen to these words. Shashali b'yircha, that they don't say einem omrim kol birchat hashachar beveit hakneset umatchilim bebaruch shama v'af beveito echad mi elef omer mi baladei birchat haTorah. And listen to what he's describing, that in his shul, in his city, the person asking, They begin davening with Baruch Shema. So you see from that right away that the Gaon's correct, that there was not a minute the same Mizmor Shir Chanukah Habayit L'David. So you see right from this description, even if the B'Sam Rosh is making it up, but it means the minute at his time was not to say Mizmor Shir. And excuse me?
In England,
in anyone who davens minigagar, the Gaon held that, you know what, the Gaon held it's the Gemara in Shabbos, that kol homea halel b'chol yom harezei macharef u'magadef. So the Gaon held that you're not allowed to add on any tehillim outside of what the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah were metaken. And therefore, if you say Mizmor Shir Chanukah Habayit L'David, you are a sinner. So I have to tell you, this is a real problem, for instance, with Hoshana Rabbah. Klal Yisrael Hoshana Rabbah says Mizmorim like Yontif. The reason we say Mizmorim Yontif Shabbos, the more Mizmorim, is because there is a din in Kedusha Tayom that there's Issa Malacha. Chalamay, there's not the same Issa Malacha as Yontif. So if you're adding on Mizmorim, either say it all of Chalamay or you can't say it Hoshana Rabbah. It's a real problem according to the Gaon. Same thing, I've seen good Jews on Yom Ha'atzmaut, Yom Yerushalayim, they add on the additional Mizmorim. That makes as much sense as singing Lecha Dodi Lekrat Kala Erev Yom Ha'atzmaut during the service. It's a sad story that we don't have Chazal today to give us a format for Yom Ha'atzmaut. So it doesn't make sense. This has to do with Shabbat, with Yom Tov, Kedusha Tayom. It doesn't have to do with Hanukkah or Purim or Yom Ha'atzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim. Okay, it's a problem. But, and then he says, listen to this. So supposedly, you have to say the Birchat HaShachar in your house. He says, maybe 1 out of 1,000 say Birchat HaShachar. All they say is Birchot HaTorah. Now this too, you can comment on. You see, the original minig of Birchot HaShachar was mamish when you open your eyes, Hanotein Lasech Livina. You understand? When you got off your bed, it's a Gemara, it's the Rambam, it's the Psak, it's a Shalom Asani Goy, Shalom Asani Yavet, Shalom Asani Isha, Pokei Chivrim, Malbisha Rumim, you got dressed, Matir Asurim, so Keif Kafufim, you start to walk. You put on your yarmulke. You put on your hat. No, you got to be a big Talmud Chacham to know how to do it properly. So you see here that it fell into misuse. And he asked, the Rush says, I asked the inquirer, why don't you say it? And he said, this is our minhag. And now this rabbi is turning to the Rush. Should I rebuke these people? Should I tell them off? Should I make an issue out of it? Or should I let them remain with their custom to minimize the prayers, the brachot that they are saying? And he talks like a London. He says, of course, Ma'ika Hadin, you should say all these brachot. But we know that there are many minhagim that crawled in that go against what Chazal said. Haftorat, laying, what do we lay in? What do we lay in on a fast day? What do we lay in on Tisha B'Av? What do we lay in on Purim? What the Haftorah that we read, and he says there are many examples where we changed the original minhag. Many examples with the Haftorah that we read every Shabbos. And he says, once the people are noheg like this, you cannot abolish it. Because every minhag that the Jewish people do, it is a minhag that is meaningful. They know what they're doing. You can defend him. He makes sense. But the end result is that he is cutting down on the davening. He's making the davening shora. And he says, listen to this sentence. And if people are complaining, they've modified the davening, they've modified the brachot. I'm quoting now. V'halavai v'yomru rov ha'olam rak miyat utfilat shmone esrei levad ubakavana. Wow. You heard that? That the less they say, the better. Halavai they should say it b'kavana. It's like a yeshiva kid in high school. He never has time to daven. He's in a rush. Comes into the Beis Medrash. Baruch Shama, Ashrei, Yishtabach. Everything else left out. Nope. According to the Besamim Rosh, Halavai, Halavai, that he should say just that and say it b'kavanah. And what you have here, this is the start of Reform Judaism. Echad hamabev, echad hamamid, the Gemara, in brachat, ubulvat sheyechav in libo l'shamayim. No, the shorter the service, the better. No, he doesn't quote it here, but this is the concept. You see it developing right before your eyes. I remember in Lakewood, there was one fellow, Charlie Weiss, I don't know what became of him, guy from Williamsburg. He never was to davening on time, but he always boasted, I always caught Baruch Hu by Yishtabach. That's where his davening basically began. Baruch Shama, Ashrei, Yishtabach, quickly, Baruch Hu. All right. And the rush is justifying it. That those words that I just read are dynamite. And then he goes on. That we have a terrible problem. That we let the Jews lit palel b'lashon hakodesh. Af al pisha ein yodin loma hamilot kutsuratan. Wow. Don't know how to speak properly. Do you understand the implications here? Get rid of the Hebrew. Get rid of the lashon hakodesh. What do we need it for? I had at the Kotel Friday night. We have our own Mincha Minyan now before we're Makabel Shabbos. So a tourist is there from L.A. and my assistant rabbi there, that's Rabbi Mark Friedman, the Chassidish guy. He's from Oakland, California. You can be certain that he and his Zayda, his father and grandfather, did not wear bekishes. But he's a kid, strong kid, became a Baal Tshuva, became a Chassid, beautiful guy, Mark Friedman. So Mark tells the Baal Tefillah, this guy had Yurtzeit, he tells him, add the prayer for rain. So I said, you heard what I said? I said, you know, you're going to mix them up. If you're not used to saying that prayer, you got to know Ivra. And the guy says to me, don't worry, Rabbi. Ken Ivra. And he said the prayer beautifully. But I see you understand exactly what he's saying.
And Chaya Franco left the Reform movement because they want to go there. And this gentleman
I'll explain to you in a second. I know what you're saying, but I just want to show you what he's saying here. Why Gil, you understand now why people see the dog that is hidden here? This is not simple. Wow. And then he ends off, in the name of the Rush, he ends off the tshuva. V'kvamar Rebbe Lazar, b'Rebbe Azaya, yechoni liftar, midin shel tfila. And he's referring to the Gemara Ne'ruvim, dach samech hei amid aleph. And what is he saying? I mean, this is just unbelievable what he's saying here. I'll give you the Gemara in a second. What the Gemara is saying is very simple. I had a very close friend. I don't want to mention his name because the story is not complimentary. Although when you look back 60 years later, or almost 60 years, you have to laugh. And he was a kid in high school, and we were in MTA together, and we were chavruta, and we were bosom buddies. Later we split, I wound up in YU, he wound up in Mir, a terrific Talmud Chacham, and later in life we met and we were helped to each other. But the friendship of youth, the feeling remains. So, again, Baal Tshuva from the streets of the Bronx. So, we're in the park, Shabbos. We must have already been, he must already be in Mir at this time, must have been about 1920, and he sees this beautiful girl. Turns out it's the Chenshkeva Rebbe's daughter. And he writes a 10-page shtickel, Chidushei Torah to the Rebbe, you know, trying to set the stage that he can ask the Rebbe for the daughter's hand in marriage. It was later published in one of his svarim. I even remember the sugi was on. And a big lam. And P.S. later that week, there's a big announcement in the Jewish papers, in the Yiddish papers, that the Rebbe's daughter was engaged months before she was born. Two Rebbetzins were pregnant, and they said, if you have a boy and I have a girl, they're going to marry each other. And that ended any dreams he had of a shirich with the Rebbe's tachta. Gili, if you don't understand my Yiddish, just ask for English translation, but that much I think you can get. Now, when he got the news, he was so upset, so distraught, he didn't daven mincha. And he said, he's part, he's not allowed to daven, it's not that he's, you know, he's not amazed, this is annoyingness. If you cannot concentrate properly, you're not allowed to daven. So, I'll show you an open Gemara, that if you, your mind is occupied, you have Akmas Nefesh on your mind, you're exempt from praying. Praying is when you can concentrate, when you're happy, when you're in a good mood. If that's the case, we should never have to daven for the last 200 years. Show me 1 minute when a Jew is in a good mood. This morning at the 5 o'clock, 5:30 minyan, the people I'm davening with were already, Rav Ovadia Yosef, they were ready to rip up, but they were going crazy. That's at 5:30 in the morning. I shouldn't have given a club. If anyone is thinking, Misha Choseva Rav Ovadia Yosef Achsav, Asulo Lehit Palel, Onis Patur Min Hatfila. It's an open Gemara, a Rufum Daf Samechei Amid Aleph. Yachol ani liftar et kol Yisrael kulo midin miyon shecharav beit hamikdash miyad achshav. The Amor is saying, or the Tana is saying, I can exempt every Jew from davening from the time the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. And he quotes the pasuk in Yeshayahu, lechem shimuna zot aniya ushkura. And what does it mean? We are shika. We are not pikhim. We have atmos nefesh. And what does it mean? Shepratur min hatfilah. That to daven, you have to be able to concentrate. If you have atmos nefesh on your mind, you cannot daven. And that's the way the rush ends off the tshuva. It is dynamite. You see here seeds of reform. Gentlemen, let me reiterate, and we have an important moment in the life of Aaron Rakefet. But let me just reiterate, what did we do today? All right, we're moving now. We finished up, we spoke about Rabbi Ovadia Yosef of Chaim Reza Grzynski. I hold it to be a very important introduction. I dealt with Rav Kook. It has enabled me to live a life without Akmas Nefesh.
What was that sentence?
It's not for now. You have to hear it. It's recorded.
Well, why can't you say it?
Because I don't have time now. It was more than a sentence. Now, then we went into the B'Samar Rosh, went into the introduction again, and we showed you the last will and testament. And I don't think you have to be a great psychologist to understand what he meant. Bury me in my clothes. Underline my. Bury me far from all the other Jews. Wow. Then we went into two examples, one about shaving, one about cutting down the tefillah. We're not finished with the Gat Kef. I'm going to show you, this is the Rush he quotes, but I'm going to show you how he adds on in the Kasa da Hasana what he has to say. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much to you, to my students over the years. I know I have driven you crazy reading to you experts and bouncing ideas off you. And as I've mentioned more than once, the six books that God has privileged me to publish until now are all more or less an attempt at scholarship. The new volume, which I've worked on since 1999, is not pure scholarship. It's a scholarly memoir, and it may, when all is said and done, be more important than anything I've ever published until now, because it captures what I have been part of, and what I was supposed to be part of to a certain degree is a good part of the history of our people at the middle and end of the 20th century, etc. Publication has worked out. It becomes a three-way partnership. The Gemara talks about a child, Shlosha Shutfin Yeshva Adam, his mother, his father, and the Ribbono Shel Olam. In this case, it's the OU, Geffen Publishers, and the author, Aaron Rakefet, with the help of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Let me just say a few words about Geffen. The OU, and I have to thank Rabbi Gil, student of the OU, extensively. He read the manuscript and was captivated by the manuscript. He edited the manuscript and did a wonderful job. I signed off on his editing in May, and he put it under the aegis of the OU, which will be very helpful as far as publicity and letting the world know that there is such a book available. You'll understand on the Monday class a few weeks down the line why this volume is so important to me, because there's going to be a Monday class where you better come wearing armor, because I will explode pshuto kamashma'o. I cannot stand lies. It destroys me. People who are b'nei Torah and lie, and it's just beyond words. But we'll get there. So the OU has to partner when they publish. And the OU chose Geffen of Yerushalayim because they don't do their own publishing. It's not like Art Scroll yet. I underline the yet. Let me just say about Geffen, what makes it so interesting is there are two types of wine. There's red wine and there's white wine. In the book, in the manuscript, you will find both red wine and white wine. Red wine, representing the blood of our people, the struggle, the fallout of the Holocaust, the Shanghai crowd, the State of Israel, the Six-Day War, the Israeli army, the two wars that I fought in, above all, communism and what it did to the remnant that survived behind the Iron Curtain. There's the white wine as well, purity, sanctity, achievement, simchat hachayim, l'chadodi l'krat kala, a generation that has risen on the ashes of destruction, how we've recreated and are creating, ennobling, enhancing daily a magnificent Torah world. And there you'll find our story, your story, my story, Lakewood, YU. I photograph Aaron Cutler, words, I photograph my Rebbeim, the Rav, Bernard Rebbe Graduate School, BMT, the whole story behind the institution that changed the Torah Anglo world. Gruss, why we're here, how we got here, who fought for us, reproducing letters that have never seen the light of day, that will enlighten you and traumatize you and shock you. simultaneously. Russian Jewry, not the red pot, but the white pot. Resuscitation, bringing them back to life. Little Aaron Rakefet, privileged to be the first one sent behind the Iron Curtain with one purpose, to start the study of Gemara in the Refusnik community. Gentlemen, I can only say, if my analogy to Geffen Publishers and red wine and white wine is correct, then I end off, as I sign my name, I end up with a prayer that halavai, people will make a tova hametiv when the volume comes out. Hatov, because the volume is decent. Hametiv, that it will have influence on many Jews and be makarev, endless, endless Jews, the Torah, Hashem, Tamima. I thank you very much for bearing with me. Some freebies. Midei Chodesh Brachot Show, anyone who will be teaching on the Israeli scene, it is a must. Edited by my own student. Bar Mishpacha, four different dishes that were given to me as a gift. Some fascinating articles, some aggravating articles. But that's the way the ball bounces. Tomorrow,
you don't want
to. It's $99,000 to get into class, because I'm revealing a document that says it all about the conservative movement and the sea change that overtook it, and Danny Wolf. As I wolf that document to you, I shake like a lizard, because there's Talmidim of mine who studied in this kollel who think more or less exactly the same way. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
We shake your hand, wish you a big thank you.
Okay, but you got to leave a morning open. I'm going to try to get them here with the pictures. It's that we have.
This
to
is about Avraham Solomon.
Beautiful.
The comment that I did over this first name is Stuart.
Stuart Miller.
Okay.
Stuart Miller.
The email is Stuart 613.
No, Stuart Miller, his wife is friend.
Wait, his email is